둘, 셋, 파!
For Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see it's you.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
Got what? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now, Long Time No See the Podcast, Season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store and online. And now, the more you buy, the more you save on beds, bases, and more. Plus, get free premium delivery on any bed with base. Limited time. For J.D. Power 2025 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Check it out at a Sleep Number store today.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead. Download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
I'm Carrie Corrigan, and this is The Opus, an exploration of legendary records and their ongoing legacy. In our latest season, I'm joined by Lizzie Hale, Warren Zanes, Daphne A. Brooks, and many more to revisit Jeff Buckley's Grace. We discuss Buckley's femininity in an era of hyper-masculine alt-rock, how the record's mythology was shaped by his tragic death, and the delicate work of keeping his legacy alive. Find us at Consequence of Sound or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's an audio interview series presented by WFPK, Independent Louisville, at wfpk.org, Consequence of Sound, and the Consequence Podcast Network. If you're you're not already a subscriber, take that moment, hit that subscribe button right now. Keep up with the series that releases interviews multiple times a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays, at least. You can do that at all the regular spots like YouTube and Spotify and iTunes and Apple Podcast, Stitcher, and all the others. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, Michael Glebicki. You know him as the lead singer of Rusted Roots. These days, he's touring both as a duo and in his new group, the Uprooted Band. And Michael's going to tell us all about what's going on with that. In fact, he's working on an album with Uprooted that he says we're going to hear some music very, very soon. We'll get the details on what to expect from this band. Not only the music that they're writing and recording, but also how he's re-envisioning some of the Rusted Root classics. And with those classics in mind, we will be heading back to 1994 to talk about their multi-platinum selling record, When I Woke. You know this for the songs Send Me On My Way, Martyr, Ecstasy, Beautiful People. It's a Stone Cold classic of the 90s. And we'll hear about how some of those tracks had actually been on their very first record, which he sort of calls the demo, the Cruel Son album, how what it was about these songs that made them raise their hand to get re-recorded for what became their national debut. Michael will tell us about what it was like to be in an organic type of band at the height of grunge, having Send Me On My Way as a defining song, and a lot of the big subjects that he was singing about at the time. A lot of this came after a trip to Nicaragua, where he found himself as a political activist, and how those same types of subjects influences his writing today. We'll also hear about opening up for the Grateful Dead, the Allman Brothers, Plant and Page, once playing a show at a Horde Festival stop with only Sheryl Crow, her dog, and her manager as the audience. And then we'll also take a moment to jump to 2009. A Rusted Root record called Stereo Rodeo was recorded that year, and we'll hear what that experience was like as well. It's Kyle Meredith with Michael Glebicki of Rusted Root.
Oh, hi.
Well, I know we're going to be talking about, you know, some anniversary stuff here, but maybe we start with the present, because you're out on tour right now, and you kind of play a dual life, right? One as a duo and one with your latest group, the Uprooted Band.
And we're recording an album that'll kind of mesh both of them together in different forms. So that's kind of neat, too.
So what is the story? I mean, of course, the last Rusted Root record came out, I think, in 2012, which we were big fans of. I do think we played Monkey Pants around here quite a lot, and still do from time to time. But since then, that's kind of been faded away. When did the whole new thing start, and what's the concept? Because as I read, there is a bit of an idea that you're going for, a new vision.
Yeah. What we're doing is kind of getting out of the old way of playing some of the Rusted Root material that we play live. We're kind of just re-envisioning it. And in that process, we're learning things about ourselves that are surprising and exciting, and they just kind of pop out of nowhere. So in my mind, as we keep playing these shows, which is about, you know, three quarters old Rusted Root material re-envisioned, and then new material that we're writing for the record, I just keep like this catalog in my mind of these different things that pop up and during the night and make us smile and make us laugh. And then I use that to kind of see what's available, you know, what jewels do we have in the basket to pull out and make an album out of.
Now, when you talk about re-envisioning, you know, some of those older songs and everything, I know for any musician after a long time, especially when we're talking, you know, over 25 years here for some of these songs, you know, that there is a strong appeal to that. Like, it's maybe out of boredom, maybe out of curiosity. But again, I feel like when you talk about it, you're talking about it more than just trying to keep yourself interested. It sounds like you're talking about trying to find something new in these songs. What is the appeal there?
First and foremost, I mean, it's to evolve as a person, and that, you know, goes beyond musicianship. It's to break down fears and find new places to get comfortable in and find new things out about yourself. And that's sort of, you know, always the ongoing process. I mean, I remember being on tour with Carlos Santana, and he said that to me one day. It was like, it's about evolution. It's not about sort of revolution. It's about not about success. It's about progress. And being on tour with him, you know exactly what he means. You know, it's that's first and foremost in his mind. And it allowed me to kind of trust that process too, whether it takes 10 years or it takes 20 years or it takes 1 year, it doesn't matter. What matters is that you're continually evolving and breaking down fears and finding new spaces. So that's sort of where I'm at. And with Rusted Root, it wasn't happening for me. So I was trying to break out into these different areas, and people were just looking at me like, what the hell are you trying to do? You know, we're totally comfortable. We're okay, you know. And I was just like, all right, let's try. You know, it was just too much work and never went anywhere. So that's what I'm doing now. And with these musicians, it's insane, man. It's just like blowing my mind. Every night is a revelation, and I'm having a blast doing it, you know, because we were literally laughing hysterically sometimes in the middle of our shows. You know, just like, wow, listen to that. You know, listen, you know, we're fans as much as the fans are, because we're hearing it for the first time.
Is there an easy way to explain the sound that you're going for with the Uprooted Band, how it's different from the past? Obviously, I don't have the luxury of hearing the album yet, so that's I'm looking for a cheat code right now.
Yeah, but I mean, we're still in the process of the album too. So, you know, it's more, I would say it's more groove based. Sometimes we lock in these grooves that are just strange and weird, and but we're like locked into it, like you can't get out of it. And I think that's different from Rusted Root. Rusted Root was more organic, sort of everybody very excitedly playing some of the same patterns over top of one another. And this is more broken up into like a more of an African drumming kind of mindset, where everybody has a role to play in this group groove, and we lock into it. You know, the vocals are the background vocals are totally different too. We're really kind of, there's more vignettes in it, like I feel like I'm watching a play or something, and there's this scene that keeps popping up with these singers that kind of happen throughout the song, and it's a stronger pull into different emotional spaces within the song. The drumming is just bigger, in the sense that there is more space in it for the low end to kind of pump out of the song, and between the percussionist and the drummer, it's just a little bit more well thought out, even though it's not.
Well, I feel like that kind of ties in a little bit, because I do want to talk about the big anniversaries. You know, When I Woke, 25 years old, and we'll touch on a little bit of the 10-year of Stereo Rodeo, if you don't mind, too. But, I mean, you're talking about reinventing these songs. In fact, with that record, When I Woke, the songs were already finding ways to be reinvented, because I don't know if you mind telling the story, but some of these songs, they started with the Cruel Son album. Were the changes to When I Woke, did that come from just playing them live like that? Was that studio fun? How did those songs stand out and get selected to say, let's do these again?
I think we were, for When I Woke, we were just trying to make the best record that we could possibly make. I mean, we felt like our first album, Cruel Son, was more of a demo. Even though we sold 30,000 of them out of our truck on the road ourselves, we sort of just felt like when we did Cruel Son, it was more to get something for our live, you know, our fans that come out and see us live to listen to, so that they could take it home with them. And it wasn't the album that we wanted to put out. So when we did When I Woke, we just kind of went through the whole repertoire and just kind of each brought our own list of songs that we thought would work well. And those are the ones that we chose. But I also felt like we weren't prepared as a studio band yet. I mean, even though the album was hugely successful, and, you know, I'm very thankful for its success and all that, but I just felt like as a creative piece, I wasn't happy with it. I felt like there was a lot of loose ends left hanging open.
That's an interesting thing to have when you have a record that big, to have that sort of relationship right there with it. Did those songs, did the big singles, did Send Me On My Way and Martyr, did they stand out on Cruel Son? Like, did you notice people connecting with them more during the earlier days, the Cruel Son days, that they might be the things to launch you?
No, I think it was more of a continuation from the earlier days. I think people gravitated towards that, those on When I Woke. I wish that they would have gotten more radio play. There was a real fear with the radio, with the record company, that people would hear Martyr or the song Ecstasy and change the channel, thinking it was a Latin station. And, you know, and then that all changed within like 5 years, you know. Everybody was okay playing Latin music on the radio.
So, you know, Carlos Santana having his own success there 5 years later, you know, just coincidentally, as we named there. But, I'm sorry, go on.
But I did feel like we could have put a little bit more of a rock element into those songs, and I think they probably would have benefited more so from that.
I mean, in hindsight, 94 does seem like it did open the door for acoustic instruments, and of course that door doesn't just go wide open. It does take some people to come. Maybe you're already kind of talking about that, but to be that sort of band when, what, at the height of grunge? Did it feel like you had to compete with that sound to get people's attention?
No, man. It was, I think, the strength of my vision and my ability is to, like, really not think about anything at all. That really is the only way it works for me. So I never felt like I had to compete with anything other than just really being honest with myself and being truthful and saying, you know, is this song really me or is it, am I trying to be something?
So Send Me On My Way does happen. It takes off. It becomes a monster song. Were you okay with that being a defining song?
Sure. Yeah, I think so. It's kind of undeniable, you know. You have, you know, hard rockers, heavy metal guys come up and say they love that song. You have all these little kids now that are coming up and watching Ice Age and Matilda, and they love that song. It's pretty universal. I mean, you know, I was sitting in a bar yesterday watching a football game on our drive, and this sort of, like, hardcore metal guy was trying to figure out who we were. When he figured it out, he was like, oh, that song's in memory, I love that song, you know. And it was just like, yeah, okay, I get it, you know. It's undeniable for whatever reason.
I had a lot of fun going back to and reading the reviews that were coming out at the time, and it was interesting because a lot of people would mention the challenge sometimes of understanding the lyrics, and of course Send Me On My Way was there, although your style had gone back. Even I was listening back, like Artificial Winter had a little bit of that in there, and it was, of course, not the only time. But I did wonder, like, how important was it to you to convey a message? Because in plenty of these songs, you were talking about some very big, important topics, or so it seems to be anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I came out of high school, and at a time, we were, like, extremely politically active in high school. We started this group. It was high school students in Pittsburgh, and we networked, like, 26 different schools, high schools, and I used to skip school and used to infiltrate other high schools and go in there and sit the lunch of these other high schools and hand out flyers, like, pretending like I went there. Like, I would dress up if it was a Catholic school, you know, wear the tie and everything. And so, like, yeah, we were extremely politically active and coming out of, you know, learning a lot about civil rights, learning a lot about disarmament, nuclear disarmament, a lot of the Central American issues that were going on at the time. I ended up going to Nicaragua as soon as I got out of high school during the Contra War. So I was down south of the fighting that was going on. I was meeting with students there, and I was, you know, pretty much trying to change the world back then, you know. And so when I came back from Nicaragua and thought I was going to change the world and then found out I couldn't do it, I got pretty depressed. And so then music became my this outlet for it, you know, and I really, you know, thought I was going to change the world through music, which I may have done a little of, but not like I thought I was going to. At that age, you know, you think it's going to happen. You know, this is definitely going to happen.
Even taking a specific topic like environmentalism, which, you know, I know that was a big part of it, too. What we were talking about 25 years ago that we're still having to talk about, and it feels like it's getting worse. I mean, that's sort of a kick in the groin right there to me personally. And again, I don't know if you perceive that the same way, because that was a big time. That was a hot topic, no pun intended, on the hot parts of 94.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was into talking about Ekotage and, you know, getting out there and putting, you know, the spikes in the trees or tearing apart the tractors that were, you know, for the deforestation and all that. I was pretty radical back then, you know, and I felt kind of weird afterwards because I got a lot of flack for it. But looking back on it, I think, you know, well, shit, I was pretty right on. I think we all should have been out, you know, doing something radical back then. We wouldn't be in the situation we're in now.
Do you find that you're still inspired to sing about similar topics? And do you approach it the same way?
Yeah. But not in the same way. I think when I write, it's kind of like I wait to understand it, and I try to get it from a bigger than myself, than my mind kind of space, which can feel like a spiritual thing, or it can feel like a muse thing, and then I wait for, you know, that's where the exciting messages come from, and that's where a lot of what I wrote came from, and all those songs back then was some space beyond me, or some space that would, some entity that would enter the room with me to write those songs. It would feel like sometimes just that kind of feeling or vibe to it. I'm not quite sure how it all worked, but that's what I try to really get to. And sometimes it's just more of getting into the musical space and opening up in ways that that I'm not used to, and then that the lyrical messages kind of come through that. But at the same time, my life experience and working in politics were a huge part of it back then, and I'm not doing that now. I'm kind of like freaked out. I don't know what to do. So that's sort of maybe what I'm trying to figure out as far as writing some of those songs and messages now.
I don't think any of us know what to do at this point. Keep trying to be a good person, you know, and that type of stuff. Small changes, as they say. And I'll hit on a little bit of the live things because, you know, so the environment and politics, that's one side of it, you know, and that's the heavier side, maybe the lighter side. This did put you, you know, in some pretty interesting situations, you know, show-wise, opening for the Grateful Dead, Allman Brothers, Plant and Page. I would think the audiences would be more receptive to an opening act with these type of bands than your normal big rock stadium act.
Yeah, every day people come up and say that they saw us with Robert Plant and Jimmy Page back in, you know, 96 or whatever it was. And from a lot of strange places too. Like, I think it was in Arkansas somewhere. And I remember the gig because I went running. I was jogging and I ended up going into what was a gang area, and people came running out of their houses to stop me and like turn me back because I knew I was going to be dead if I went like another 2 blocks.
Oh, wow.
So that's how I remembered the gig. But, you know, someone just said yesterday, you know, oh, I saw you at that gig in Arkansas at that agricultural center. And I was like, oh my God, I just remember this whole story. You know?
Was it true that you all once played a stage at the Horde Festival to basically what I read as Sheryl Crow and her dog?
Yeah. And her manager. Yeah. That was pretty funny. Yeah, we were doing good, kind of spiraling out of Pittsburgh. We got up into upstate New York and West Virginia a little bit, and Ohio. But when we got out a little bit further from that circle, we didn't have many people that knew us. So we were just a band on the Horde Fest that went on first. And I think doors had just opened, and I think nobody was there yet in the parking lot. So we just played anyhow. It was funny. But then, you know, we had crowds in Colorado that were building at that same time. So I think it was like a month after that show with at Horde with Sheryl Crow, and that Sunday on the Way started to take off. So then everybody started coming out and seeing us.
It's funny when you hear about those type of early day shows, just the drasticness of the crowds to play from no one to everyone and then back and forth for a little while. I mean, what I don't know what that has to do with your emotions, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I kind of just remember being so affected by everything back then. I was probably a wreck, you know. But then you feel really good the one day that it works.
Right.
And, you know, it can be an hour later and you find out you have 3 tickets sold and everything's wrong. Everything, everything's terrible.
Well, I'll jump up really quickly to 2009, just because Stereo Rodeo, another great record, did turn 10 years old. And I didn't want to overlook that. And sort of just, it was a 7-year stretch at that point. Did you feel that it was starting to wind down? I mean, there would be one more record after this, but it, did it start to kind of have that sense that this was maybe not going to be forever at the moment?
I thought we were just getting restarted when we did Stereo Rodeo. And I felt like there was a lot that we had to learn to pull off some of those grooves and sort of re-envision it. And I was like all in to that this is the new thing. And then, you know, every 2 to 3 years, we're going to put out a new record that's going to be even better. And probably, you know, I thought we were going to go somewhere pretty amazing, but it never happened.
Which, again, you know, just considering the songs on the record, it's a really good record. And it was, I think some people were calling it at the time like, oh, it's a return to their roots. Again, no pun intended. Which is always sort of a tricky thing to throw at someone because a band is trying to take it one way further and you've got critics or whoever saying, oh, look, here they are. They're not sounding like the last record. They're starting to sound like themselves or whatever that means.
I think maybe it was, you know, honest. You know, if it's bullshit, I kind of, you know, get mad and say, you know, like, why can't somebody be smarter? But if you know, I kind of felt like, you know, Welcome My Party got slammed for being too commercial. And I think we were trying too much to get a hit single on that record. And I think maybe it threw some people off. I remember, because it kind of lined up with my own feelings about that whole experience, that I was trying to make like a moodier, more intimate record. And all of a sudden, just her little comments here and there and different things we were trying out, people wanted to try out, it just seemed like everybody had it on their mind, like, let's get another hit single, you know? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really work that way, especially for Rusted Root. And I think I went along with it because I didn't know. And I think other people were trying it out because they didn't know. And I think for Rusted Root, it just does not work. You know, you can try to get a radio hit, and it's the exact wrong thing to get a radio hit for Rusted Root. Like, the way you do it with Rusted Root is you don't think about it at all, and you just keep going until something feels so emotionally joyous or emotionally whatever that it's undeniable, like Send Me On My Way. You know, I wasn't trying to write a hit single on Send Me On My Way.
Well, for what it's worth, I love Welcome to My Party. Without any context, it's one of my favorite songs, maybe of all time. I absolutely love it.
That's a great song.
So that does bring us back into the present day. So you've said you're working on the record. You might have thrown out some timelines before, and again, I know that's tricky, but do you have a hopeful ETA of when the Uprooted record is going to come?
Well, absolutely, for sure. In the next 3 months, we're going to start dropping singles for the next record. And what I hope to do is drop 2 a month for a little while and then put the album out.
Awesome, man. Well, I'm looking forward to that. I cannot wait to that. Thank you so much for talking to me today, taking the time and heading down memory lane.
Yeah, man. And keep an eye out on my website, michaelglebicki.com, for the new material, and maybe get some free music to the fans there.
Absolutely. Will do.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks so much.
All right. Thank you. Take care, man.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
Big thanks, Michael Glebicki. Rusted Root, 25th anniversary of When I Woke, 10th anniversary of Stereo Rodeo, and looking forward to the new music by Uprooted as well. And that does it for this edition, too. Before you get out of here, please hit that subscribe button and keep up with the series. If you're not already a subscriber, you can do so. Stitcher or Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts from. Hit that subscribe button and keep up with us. You can also find bonus episodes at WFPK.org, which is where I do a show Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. You get an hour's worth of new song premieres and music news, anniversary spins, and clips from these interviews as well. ConsequenceOfSound.net has your music and film news. You can also find me at Twitter at Kyle Meredith, Facebook/Kyle Meredith. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.